This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, I'm Sharad Kutin. With me, Tan Chung Han and Joyce Goh. We've reached hump day, as we used to call it. Then it turned into midweek, just because of the midweek polls. And nobody calls Wednesday, you know, hump day anymore. But
don't speak for yourself. I still do.
You do? Okay, that's Tan Chung Han, if you didn't recognize that voice. unmistakable, you know, in its graveliness. This is the 11th of July, and we're taking it all the way up to 10 o'clock in the morning with a range of interviews, views, and analysis. Now, very quickly, World Cup resumed last night, and France beat Belgium 1-0, which means that France goes into the finals. Yay!
Well, allez la bleue, as the French supporters would say. So look, they have only got one World Cup title to their name, 1998. So it would be rather apt if 20 years on, they won their second World Cup. But we have to see who wins the next semifinals. They'll be played at 2 a.m. on Thursday between England and Croatia. Is football coming home, as the English fans say? We'll have to wait and
see. The Three Lions.
The Three Lions.
Well, I thought football is the cup coming home, isn't it?
Well, but the phrase is, or the song is, football's coming home.
Oh, I see.
There's a song.
And because when was the last time England won the World Cup?
1966.
So that's a little more than 20 years.
A lot more.
Okay. So in the toss-up between France and England, if it was that was the final configuration, Joyce, who would you be rooting for?
England, but I have a feeling France looking pretty strong. Mm. Yeah, but I'm rooting for England.
Oh, why are you rooting for England?
Just the underdog.
All colonial, colonial power. underdog.
Yeah, I don't know. I think because France is seen as the favorite for this. Well, I don't know, right? Han? Yeah. I don't know. Because I'm not the football expert here. We have to ask Tan Chung Han.
Yeah, I mean, based on the four teams that made it to the semifinals, France are the favorites.
Yeah.
And so now they have made it to the final.
Right.
So we'll wait and see, yeah.
Okay, you know, England bringing football hooliganism to a higher level every time they have.
Who are you rooting for, Shrek? Because you always like the underdog, right?
Yeah, I'm going to go. I mean, regardless of who the underdog is, I'm going to go for France. I support England.
Okay.
Way to sever those colonial ties there. Yeah.
You know, no, I just, yeah, no, there are all kinds of reasons why.
How about
I would
yourself,
choose France.
Yeah, I have to go with France as well.
Okay.
I mean, and for the record, and our intern Anzio can back me up here on this, even before the tournament began, I said that France and Belgium would have a really good run this time, and sure enough, both of them made it to the semifinals, France in the finals now. So, hey, pat myself on the back.
Oh, because
done.
No one else will.
Yeah,
okay, World Population Day is today. It's the 11th of July, and it's being celebrated for, I think about 20 years now or more, or at least since 1987. That's right, 1987. The theme of this year, family planning is a human right. And that, of course, leaves it at that. We'll be back with a look at the 12 boys and their coach from the Wild Boars football team in Thailand. We're going to be looking at their rescue next. Stay tuned at BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, Paul McCartney with Band on the Run. I'm Sharad Kutin. With me, Tan Chung Han and Joyce Goh. And the morning run is taking you all the way up to 10 o'clock this morning. It's the 11th of July. And yesterday we celebrated the rescue of the 12 boys. They were a football team. They are a football team, the Wild Boars in Thailand. And their coach rescued from that cave when they found themselves inadvertently trapped by rising water. It's an extraordinary story that's gripped the world, actually, and in many ways, an international effort to British caving, diving experts were responsible for locating the boys in the first place and then planning their rescue, because also Thai authorities, and it's such an amazing story. Were you gripped by it?
Yeah, we were following it from day one, and to hear, I mean, they're about age between 11 to 16, 12 boys and their coach. They went into the cave and how they got stuck there. I mean, the story is astonishing, and it was really scary at that time. We were wondering how to get them out. It's, you know, when they came out with the pictures of the cave and how it started flooding in the cave, and they had to keep on going inside, right, further into the cave. And everyone's asking, how did they get trapped there? But it's because of the rain and the flood.
Right. And certainly that drama sparked Elon Musk into action as well, offering his assistance. Unfortunately, you know, while all 12 boys and the football coach are safe, it did claim the life of one Thai diver who unfortunately, fell unconscious when he was trying to bring some oxygen tanks into certain parts of the cave.
Yeah, in fact, I think it was on his return journey. Right. So he had taken oxygen in, he and his buddy were coming out, and he apparently ran out of oxygen. He passed out, his buddy tried to revive him, but it couldn't. And it's very sad story, because he was a very young man. And I remember that moment in the story thinking, well, if he as a Navy SEAL, as a retired Navy SEAL, could find this kind of difficulty, how much more the boys, right? And untrained, and as well as their coach.
Yeah, right. This is Saman Gunan, his name, and forever I think he'll be remembered as a hero.
Right, you know, so, you know, but here we are, certainly elated by the fact that all 12 boys and the football coach are safe, you know, and look, there's this element of human drama to it that we can all relate to, because, you know, I mean, I just can't imagine, being stuck in a cave for, what was it, over 2 weeks?
Yeah, two weeks. It was two Saturdays ago that they were, I think, formally said to have gone missing. You know, what's also an extraordinary part of the rescue was the fact that they, the boys, and I imagine the coach too, were given a sedative so that they would be calm. Because one of the biggest problems was this fear that the boys would panic. Because it's not only a difficult journey out of the cave, it was a long journey out of the cave. And so they were actually sedated. Right. Not, you know.
I mean, even before the rescue attempt, there are stories about how the coach, who had actually trained as a monk before, had actually taught the boys to meditate in order to preserve energy, right? So there are all these elements of human perseverance, right? I can't imagine the toll that it took on their spirits and their mind, but here we are, they're all safe and sound.
Yeah, and they also, you know, and I think it's... The questions are being asked also about why this particular case of children in distress has grabbed the attention of the world when there's, you know, on a daily basis, other instances of kids in distress. And I think it might come back to the way the story unfolds, right, in part, because there's a bit of an arc. They go missing, they're found, but that doesn't end the story.
But
there's
it couldn't come out, and it kept having to go in deeper into the cave.
I mean is that having been lost...
Yeah.
Then having been discovered, the discovery itself doesn't end the story. The story continues because the rescue is actually something that's actually very difficult.
Yeah, it took a long time. Right.
So there was still risks attendant to that rescue.
So it's almost like there's a third act to this story. And you know, we have been accustomed to digesting these stories in that your stereotypical three-act format, right? You see all your movies, you know, you have those kind of storylines. And I think rumor is that, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if this entire ordeal eventually becomes this gripping Hollywood drama. I mean, we saw with 127 or 147 hours, the one with James Franco, that individual who had his arm caught by that boulder and then became this Oscar-winning movie, right? You know, so, yeah, you have these kind of storylines that we're accustomed to, and I think this narrative fit nicely. Yeah.
Do you watch Thai movies, Nam Nak?
No, not
and
really.
All this?
They come up with scary movies, right?
They do. Yeah. They're very well known for their scary movies, Nam Nak being one of the famous ones. But yes, who will play the coach, I guess,
Well,
the story?
Producer Sim is saying that actually Hollywood producers were already on site at where the cave was.
Oh, okay. They're like scavengers, aren't they? Like vultures circling. Oh, dear.
Yeah, okay, we're going to the scene.
I'm going to be looking at a very important issue about your waistline, because waistlines were central to the story of the cave escape. You know, if you were, you know... with girth, like Han and I, you might not have ever escaped. You might have had to live out your life cave.
On the flip side, we wouldn't have gone that deep.
We both look like monks. We could live deep in a cave, meditate, and people will come to us.
Oh my.
Too big to remove ourselves. Okay, stay tuned, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, Camera Obscura with This Is Love. I'm Gerard Kutin. With me, Tan Chung Han and Joyce Goh. And you can all participate in this conversation by tweeting us at BFM Radio or WhatsApping us at 01878988999. In fact, we already have quite a few contributions to the conversation this morning. One on the origins of the game of football, why it's, you know, bring football back to England. There's some who claim that it's England that is the birthplace of football. And then there are others who tell us, no, that's not true. It's China. China, folks, it's China that is the birthplace of everything. Yeah. Gunpowder, firework, whatever, everything, like everything.
Right. Well, I guess my ancestors as well. So
from Klang, right?
Well, then if you go back further, it'd be China. Oh. La. Anyways, and for the record, Sharad, it's football's coming home. That's a phrase, not bringing back football or whatever you said just now.
Bring back the glory.
Yeah, bring it.
Okay, so how do we resolve this problem? Because somebody's told us that the modern game of football traces its origins to a 1863 Laws of the Game, which is the original codification for the game that was developed by the Football Association of England.
Well, okay, look, I'm sure everybody wants to lay claim to it, but...
Like
you know,
bak kut teh.
Yeah, exactly. or like nasi lemak, right? Yeah. You know, so, I mean, so be it. But what really matters is that, you know, by about 1 a.m. Malaysian time on Monday, we will find out who the 2018 World Cup winners will be.
Okay, on the question of the rescue of those Thai kids and their coach, Ann Tan has weighed in with a remark, slightly perhaps unkind. She says that it was not the smartest thing to do going into the cave in the first place in this weather. So, okay, thank you, Ann. We wish you luck with the rest of your life. Okay, now let's have a look with the Indian police. Apparently, they've been told to slim down or lose their job.
So this is a story that came out to say that basically they're saying that they have to lose weight or face suspension from service. And he's saying the chief at the Reserve Police in India saying that told BBC that he was worried about the increasing number of obese personnel in the force.
Mm. And so that raises the question, right? Whether or not there are certain body types that are ideal for certain jobs, or I guess to put it rather bluntly, you know, should someone get fired because they are overweight? I think that the short answer is, you know, yes, there are some jobs that require a certain body type or, you know, to be physically fit, then maybe in this case, a policeman are one of them.
Yeah, and in radio, for instance, you can be any size. In fact, you can look like anything. So it's often said, and Joyce, you're not included in this.
You know,
some of us have a face for radio.
Well, you know? I have a face for radio.
No, well, don't be silly. You're very pretty. Oh, you're very pretty.
Well,
no, I mean, coming back to the waistline. Let's come back.
Moving on to the Indian policemen, what they're saying. So now what the KSRP, this is the Karnataka State Reserve Police people, have started providing classes in swimming, yoga, and other sports to officers. Yeah. So they're trying to help their officers out.
Well, that's great. Yeah.
Mm, yeah.
But because like in the States, you know, you got your cops who have their stereotypical donut munchers, right? You know, it's terrible. And there are quite a few of them are overweight, you know.
Okay, but so the issue really there is, and we come back to, does the job require it, right? So our job requires us to have a clear voice and keep ourselves healthy so that we can sound good on radio. But cops do have some physical activity, and I've seen this with my own eyes, which is cops chasing bad people, like literally chasing them down the road. And if you're not fit, you're not going to get very far.
Mm-hmm. Actually, I just experienced that yesterday.
A cop chased you down?
Yeah, there was
you
this
down.
Guy not chasing oh. someone down the road. And he was fit. He came out. He was actually in the traffic light line with us. He was behind about two cars behind us, a police car. And there was this guy chasing after another guy and started hitting him, and the guy fell down.
Oh.
And they were fighting full on. This was on the road in broad daylight, and the cops came down from the car and started running after them, and the cops were fit.
Okay,
so
well,
the
bigger question here is, Joyce, where was your smartphone? Why didn't you take a video of this? This would have gone viral.
I was driving my kids
tell us what and how you like your cops. Do you like them slim and fit, or do you like them slightly, you know, huggable, you know, roly-poly? Tell us what you think. We're coming up to the first bulletin of the morning and taking us there, Smashing Pumpkins with 1979. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, the Stripes with their rather noisy harmonicas there, I think. Got Love If You Want It. I'm sure I couldn't. With me, Tan Chung Han and Joyce Goh. Do you guys like harmonicas?
Yeah, well, okay. You it's call okay. it noisy. You know, some people call it, you know, plenty of soul and character. Come
yeah,
on,
noisy is not a bad kind of, for me, an oh. adjective. It's just a descriptive thing.
Oh, you know? Okay. All right. Well, okay. You're noisy, Sharad.
I am. And, you know, get noisy with us. Remember, you can always tweet us at BFM Radio, WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899. Today is World Population Day. And the theme globally is family planning is a human right. And later on this morning, we're going to be speaking about World Population Day on The Breakfast Grill. Our guest this morning, Marcella Suazo from the United Nations Population Fund, and also Dr. Kamaruzzaman Ali from the Federation of Reproductive Health Associations in Malaysia. So that's going to be a very enlightening grill, I hope. Okay.
Looking forward.
Yeah, so am I. Okay, let's move on to the man that's caught our attention, kept the attention of the world, in fact, Joe Lau, as Kusu Chuang likes to refer to him, because they're both from Penang. What we're learning now is Joe Lau, not surprisingly, has several passports, and that's why he's a bit of a trick to get hold of, to put it mildly. The question is, should Malaysians be allowed to hold dual citizenship? We're not allowed.
We're not. I guess in this day and age with the Malaysian diaspora everywhere right now, some people will say, yeah, we should hold to dual citizenship. Why not? But I can understand why some countries do not allow it, though, because it's seen as just the commitment is not there to a particular country. It's like you're hedging your bets in a way. But between two countries?
Yeah, but in a globalized world, right, and with increasing geographical mobility, right, you know, what does a passport really mean? You know? I mean, if we can
It means, in fact, in many instances, being able to cross into certain countries where there might be restrictions. Mm-hmm. And more importantly, you know, I don't think it's wrong for people to say to hedge their bets or to reassure themselves, especially as national governments fail people around the world. I mean, they're corrupt, they're self-serving, they're authoritarian, they're repressive. You know, they want to get into your bedroom when they have no business to be there. Why shouldn't you? Why should you give your whole support to the government? Because it's about governments. It's not about the country.
Yeah, governments.
Right. And we can use the line from, I think it's John Lennon's song, right? You know, imagine no borders, right? You know, that is perhaps the utopian dream for some people.
I'm going to check the lyrics of Imagine. Right, I don't know if this is Imagine There Are No Borders. It might be, but I like
no,
the
no
idea.
No countries, I think.
Yeah, no countries, yeah. And so what's the upside to this, right? So we know that the traditional arguments against a dual citizenship or multiple citizenships is that the question of loyalty to the nation, right, and divided loyalties. But what about the fact that we want to have, say, a program to get Malaysians in the diaspora to return? We were talking about the finance minister's recent statement about that. Would something like dual citizenship or multiple citizenship actually aid us to get that talent back?
Perhaps.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's about, you know, according them the... Well, I think they also kind of get a good deal, right, with certain tax breaks and other initiatives and whatnot. Anything to entice them to come home and contribute to this Malaysia Baru will be welcome, you know. And whether or not these overtures might risk the notion of, you know, Malaysian citizenship by offering, you know, them the chance to get to hold dual citizenship as opposed to just one, I think that's up for debate. You know?
Okay, what about this, right? India has this program called People of Indian Origin. I think it's changed to Overseas Indian Citizen. It's actually called the Overseas Indian Citizenship Program that allows somebody like me with ancestors from the subcontinent to actually apply. Does that mean my loyalty is divided? I mean, could I stand accused of that?
No, I think that's not a passport, right? But anyways, a passport is just a document. It doesn't matter.
China has the same code.
Yeah. So at the end of the day, it depends on the person.
Right.
Well, tell us what you think. You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We'll be back shortly. We can continue this conversation. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9. That was John Lennon with Imagine.
And it looks like I stand corrected. The lyrics read, "Imagine there's no countries, not borders." But, you know, same thing. Same.
That's Tan Chung Han. Mea culpa. Mea culpa. And also Joyce Goh, because we've been talking this morning about the rescue, that amazing rescue of 12 young boys and their coach from the cave. I'm just looking at some of the news feed. I'm not sure, or news flow, whether some of the rescuers remain in the caves and they're still yet to come out. The whole thing done and dusted. In fact, there's a lot of collateral damage. Farmers in nearby fields have had their fields flooded because it's the pumping of the water out of the caves. That water had to go somewhere, and it went and inundated fields to the detriment of farmers, but they were willing to accept it.
Right. But the headline remains that those 12 boys and their coach are out safe and sound. I mean, because the heightened risk with them was that reportedly some of them didn't know how to swim, and obviously not expert divers, you know, with low visibility and with all that equipment, how would they be able to withstand that rescue process? But it looks like they did. So you would think that those risks would be significantly lower for the rescuers to be able to get themselves out.
Yeah, I'm getting notice that in fact all the rescuers are out.
Okay.
Now, speaking about caves, the Perak government plans to shut down access to a prehistoric cave called Gua Tambun and the rock paintings there.
Yeah, so, you know, which raises the question here, you know, about whether or not these archaeological sites, you know, these historical sites, really, does tourism ultimately bring a net positive, you know, for the, you know, in terms of the preservation agenda, right? Because we have had this conversation many times, you know, right here on this show. Say, even like the likes of Malacca, with so much history and culture there, yet it appears to be severely diluted just to pander to tourist money, right?
Yeah, but it's not just the tourists. If you look at the pictures, I mean, the whole area is just poorly maintained. You know, no one has kept it well. I'm not sure who's in charge of this, but if you look at the photos, it's quite sad. Even at the you have some dump litter. Yeah. Horse droppings around on the ground, and then you
are
look
you sure
at,
they're not goats?
And you can see
smaller pellets, I think.
All right, Jack Hanna.
I want to say something though. You know, because there's this idea that you don't have to go there and experience it. Maybe the preservation of these sites would be better off if people weren't, you know, stomping all around them. But having been to the Mulu Caves and seeing how well managed that is, both the park and everything around it, I'm just saying it is an extraordinary experience. You just have no sense of what geological time looks like until you go into a cave,
right,
and you see the stalagmites and stalactites, and you see the vases, knowing how long it took for water and erosion and all those other dynamics to create those structures. You cannot, it is not like looking at a photograph. You have to go.
Yeah, certainly. And I concur with you, but perhaps the discussion here is, should that bar be set higher? Because we have seen some of these geological formations that have been harmed because of rising tourism. I mean, I go diving a fair bit, and so often you hear these stories from the locals, the reefs were a lot better, 5-10 years ago, until you guys came along with your suntan lotions, right? So I guess to oversimplify it, and just to help us kind of formulate our opinions on this, is should everything be opened to tourists?
Absolutely. And, and maybe the issue is also management, right? You can get people to not use suntan lotion, and you can also restrict numbers. You can
crowd control.
Yeah, can make sure that you can have a number that's optimal for the reef, for instance, if that reef is involved. Anyway, tell us what you think. Join the conversation on BFM at BFM Radio or WhatsApp at 018-789-8899. We're coming up to the next bulletin and taking us there. The Black Keys with Tighten Up. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.